Oh, God.
Well, hello there. It feels so imposing every time we hear it, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It's a little threatening.
It is a little threatening. I don't think I think even with this threatening aura, we can still take a moment to take a big breath in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can come back and we can figure out what the hell is going on with the path today, right? We can actually meander through these different arrows. We can come through these different transitionary paths, right? We can come from these different places of shock and or horror and sudden attitudes of different noises and confusion sounds. And we can take our time to find our peace, and we can take our time to find our quiet. Because as always, we get to walk in through the doors of the Tavern Post Inn, and who do I get to see?
Jared! It's your buddy.
Well, and how are you? It is your buddy. How are you doing today, Jared?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Paul, thanks for asking. It's been a long... I'll say it was a long week, a long weekend of getting stuff done, but luckily I was able to engage in a little bit of self-care yesterday, which was very helpful for obviously overall mental health as well. And then today just getting back at the grind. So that's really what Mondays are for, right? It's like the end hangover. You're trying to just get your life back on track.
No, I know. I mean, right? Like, I feel like that's one of the reasons why the meditation was so abrupt today, is because we're in such a place that you and me have been in this place of go, go, go from quite literally a health perspective and a life intensity perspective in some serious ways. And we just find ourselves here once again, right? And it is a transition for how we have come to record and to be in this time and space together. So it's like a really cool, exciting place to be in, like to be able to still abruptly be in these spaces, even with the intensity of life going on. So I'm happy to be here with you.
Likewise.
I think then we should just dive right into this week's question of the week, right? And I'll pose a pretty simple question for you, Jared, and to the traveler, of course, that's listening in too.
Sure.
What's your favorite prehistoric animal?
This is a thought-provoking question, Tall.
So what's like prehistoric animal about it? And what do you make up about it? Like, what do you think? How do you think it existed in the world? Do you think it was a happy little dude? Do you think it was miserable? Do you think it enjoyed the swamp? Or do you think it enjoyed the desert? Or what do you think it was?
You know, I think I'm going to have to go with whatever the first land tetrapod was, or that first transitional species out of the water, because I think that time between having all aquatic species of life to having these expansive, almost like transitional regions into themselves, where it kind of, I guess, pulled life along or kind of influenced life to start to adapt to more drier conditions outside the water, starting to develop lungs, breathe air, to fully committing to the land and just completely saying, well, why do we need to be in the water, right? Let's just go be just go be on the land. And that was a very interesting time, because they didn't have to do that per se. It's just, again, all organisms have these like survival adaptations that they make, but even some choices can be random at times. So you just happen to find yourself living on that coastal region, and then it just so happens to predispose you to this transition. And then you find yourself completely out of the water. And I mean, I want to say that, you know, I don't know if they were happy, if they were sad, angry, whatever, but I do have to say that I'm pretty sure that there was a lot of stress in those organisms, or had to have been, just because you're trying to live in both worlds, right? Like, you're trying to live in the aquatic world, and you're trying to live in the, like, physical world outside the water. I feel like that takes a big toll on your species and your body. I mean, you have to have gills and lungs. I know that there's organisms today that offer both, but you have to think that these transitional species were really split. And I mean, these are also premature lungs. Like, this is the first time that any organism had adapted to breathing, at least from like a more or less like a animal sense, maybe not an insect or a plant, but like an animal breathing or breathing oxygen. So I'm sure that they were stressed out and they're just trying to get to their next meal.
No, I think it's really interesting, right? When you start thinking about those, when, like you said, those transitionary species and like these species of like full-on colonization of a new life form, right? You had a world at this time who had only been kind of semi-colonized by different kind of plants and bacterial life and stuff like that, right? And invertebrates were able to start appearing around the same time, you know, basically scorpions on land and stuff like that. And you start to see the emergence of these amphibian-like creatures too. Like, and I always find it so interesting, right? You know, how we literally do quite, you know, I don't know how accurate it actually is, but, you know, how we always invoke the image of that primordial swamp, right? Of this place where this, like, life emerged out of those waters, right? So I don't know how hallmark that is actually true, or if it was more of like a desert landscape that these little creatures were coming off the shores of, or exactly how were they materialized. But just thinking of these little vertebrates for the first time taking steps on land, I mean, that's quite literally our ancestry, right? And we do go back to that in, on a very primal and biological level, right? So I think that, you know, taking the time to acknowledge that headcanon is pretty fun, right? About all these little dudes swimming around a swamp.
Indeed, indeed. What's yours, Saul?
I think that my one is kind of, so while you take this very rational approach to it, right, and take it very ordered, like, oh, this is this really cool luminary transitional species, right, I take a kind of a different approach to it, where I like to go into the alternative and revisionist side of what history could be. And so I like to go into some conspiracy with my historical animal perspective. So I like to think that Gigantopithecus, right? The giant apes that used to live across Southeast Asia, to our knowledge and everything like that, right? They are the predecessors of what would evolve into Bigfoot, essentially, right? Is my opinion on it. And these giant apes and everything's evolved in ways that evolved wild magic and everything like that, and were able to evolve into different type of natural sciences along with our industrialization and everything like that, just in an ancient time. And these are the original progenitors of who went into the hollow earth and everything like that. You know, we see this coming out in Godzilla versus King Kong, you know, and everything like that. And the new one where they now team up to face off of these other giant apes that are in the hollow earth and everything like that. So I really think that, you know, during World War II, this is what the Nazis were really after, going into Antarctica and everything like that. And what they were really trying to pursue when they were trying to investigate the Himalayas and the Yeti and all their weird esoteric stuff, right? You know, so I love this weird potential through line of weird revisionist history of this natural and pretty sacred creature into some traditions, right, being taken as this weird through line through this potential all insane conspiratorial lens of this other potential hollow earth and like insane magnitude of what life could be and everything like that. I think it's also really interesting because it's one of those creatures, right, that we only have such very little skeletal evidence of. I think we only have like a few molars that have been discovered in a couple of caves in China, in some of, I believe, somewhere else in Southeast Asia too as well. So it's one of those things that we know so little about it, but we just know it was massive, and it was like the biggest version of like what an ape, which is again our direct ancestry, like the, you know, when we kind of touched on there, that we've had, right? So I think that it's this insane mega creature, right? That like there's so much room for being like, no, this is the creature that is literally the guardian between worlds and gateways and like Mothman's homie, right? You know, and it's this other like you know humanoid race that is this little bit more you know maybe with it than our divide from Eden, right? You know, what was the divorce? They went in and we went out, and now they want in, right? So I like having this, like, even though again none of that's accurate, right? It was this beautiful creature that lived in a part of the world with growing hominids. I like to think of it like these fun little, like, insane revisionists, like, what could this be? What is the truth reptilian people thing of it, you know?
An alternate history.
An alternate history of Gigantropithecus Blackie, brought to you by Tall the Journeyed.
I love it. That was a really compelling story.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that there's some room for some really good fiction in that, for sure. But thank you for taking the time to join us here today, man. Anything else you'd like to say?
I just have to say that I can envision you up by, like, a whiteboard with, like, a bunch of pictures and evidence with those, like, connected by those, like, red strings. And you're just standing up there, like, pointing at it. Like, I figured it out.
It's out there. It's there for you to know.
I feel like you need that as, like, a photo op, for sure. Like, connecting all your evidence together and then just post it to your Instagram and say, I figured it out. I solved it.
At some point in the descent, there'll be some madness of some photo op, of course. That's only the natural thing. You have to document the process.
Absolutely. So it's the creative process, travelers. So
that's what you want to call it. That's one way to describe it.
But yeah, I mean, no, I appreciate your story. Your perspective was excellent. I know I don't offer any interesting alternate history canon, because it wouldn't even make sense if my creature was like the founder of Atlantis, because we're talking about creatures that existed hundreds of millions of years ago. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But I mean,
what if they invented, like mud calculus?
It could have.
It could have just been lost to all. Like, what if they were the first things to understand calculus, and it took all the way to get to Isaac Newton to rediscover it?
Maybe they're the ones that were first tapping into our resources, like, yeah, underground.
Like they understood that they had to become the fossil fuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Say that they dug a lot of caves and then they let themselves decompose, left all their buried,
yeah, for us.
Left all their dead bodies down there for one day to tap in that potential, thinking it would be them, but it was actually their descendants hundreds of millions of years ago that did that. So very, like, very interesting.
Sacrifice herself now for some weird hairless beach ape later on.
Yeah, I'll pass. But at least there's a very good in-universe explanation for why those transitional species came out of the water. The moon. It was so close to the early primordial Earth that it created these extremely large tidal zones. And it's in those tidal zones that these creatures came to be.
We lived in a world of extremes, and that's something that we really do forget to understand. Like, in like that primordial swamp was not a place of calm.
Mm-mm. No. You had to adapt.
With that, I ask you, Jared.
Mm-hmm.
I ask you one very, very important thing.
Sure.
Is there anything at all that would stop you, if you were in that transitional species, from taking those steps onto land?
Anything.
What would stop you?
Probably UV radiation.
Well, that's a good one. Yeah, like literally just being like fried to a crisp as soon as you got out of, mm-hmm, like a different medium. Yeah, that's a solid one.
Yeah.
I think, like, the giant scorpions, too, would be pretty scary, too. But, like, they were in the water, too, though. So, like, it wasn't, like, an in or out kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, buddy, I remember you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, poisonous plants.
Because the ozone layer was not in the same layer level it was then, right? I don't know how that worked. How was the ozone layer back then?
I mean, we've always had a magnetosphere, but you never know if it's, like, think about during a pole shift where the magnetic fields are shifting, weakens the early sun.
You know how pissed
wasn't
I was if
too
I was
much different, but
land and my compass didn't work.
Yeah, you go through all this work to evolve, yeah, to go on land, and then your skin just gets fried to a crisp.
Yeah, cool. I'm fucking a baconator now. Great.
That's the canon. That's where Wendy's Baconator comes from.
Wendy's Baconator, the original amphibian.
Oh, that could be a movie. Explains all of Wendy's lore.
If we're coming up with the headcanon for Wendy's, we're off the rails here, my friend.
Yeah, we definitely are. We definitely are. But this has been a fun one. So thanks for coming up with a really insightful question. Prehistoric. We're going Jurassic Park today. Even beyond.
Primordial.
Primordial. Primordial tides. Tides come in and they go out.
Well, thank you very much, Jared, for taking the time in your day to make the space here with us. Thank you, Traveler, for listening. And as always, think about what is your favorite prehistoric animal and what your headcanon is about it, because goddammit, you are enough.
Namaste. Once more.